Listen to music and podcasts from CGSF 90.1 FM with our radio app. It's on-the-go listening made easy. You can tune into all our music, spoken word, and multicultural shows using your device. Our app lets you set reminders so you'll never miss your favorite show again. Stay connected to CGSF 90.1 FM through our community radio app. Download the app from the Apple Store or get it on Google Play.
Oh my god, my name is John and I just found the body heat since 3 days!
This is Siddo and body heat made me breakfast this morning.
This is Mel and body heat makes me wet my panties.
Hi, my name is Lily. I literally use YouTube MP3 to steal a lot of body sync music. Thank you, that's all. Bye.
Hi, this is Calvin from New York, and body sync helped deliver my my brother in the back of a taxi on New Year's Eve. Thanks.
Hey, this is Thurston. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby. Yeah, keep listening.
Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy. Often a major life event will be the impetus for seeking mental health care. It can also shape what we create. When Tara Hahn found out her daughter had a muscular disease, her depression and anxiety spiraled. Tara sought counseling and it gradually became clear that she had unresolved issues. Tara is the lead singer of California ska punk band Half Past Two. She has become an advocate for people with disabilities, not only for her family, but also within the punk scene. After inner band turmoil threatened her future in music, Tara entered the recording studio with a newfound urgency from all that she'd been through. She began addressing the hard topics of abuse, mental health, grief, and ableism in her songs. More importantly, she became a better bandmate, mother, and all-around beacon of strength and light for those around her.
Tara Hahn, and I play in a SoCal ska band, Half Past Two. And I got started in punk rock when I was in middle school. My aunt, who was only a few years older than me, she started taking me to like punk rock and ska shows in Orange County. And I really loved it. I was kind of not a very cool kid, so I just felt really cool when I was at shows. And we had like a really cool all ages venue in Anaheim. It's still there, Chain Reaction. I started going and then I went to concerts and grungy little shows all through high school in my 20s. And at the end of high school, we started our band Half Past Two, and we've been a band for 19 years. So I have been playing those same shows that I started at going to when I was like 12 and 13 for the last 19 years. And I've seen ska music down, up again, like it's all over the place. I would say it's a lot nicer to play in a ska band now than it was in the early 2000s when we started in 2006. And as far as my mental health journey, I have always genetically been predisposed to being sort of depressed and having anxiety. And when I was younger, I think specifically for my generation, it wasn't something that we got to talk about. It was a big part of my life, but it was always something that I was just sort of pushed through. And that has always been the case until recently. I think a lot of people now are willing to talk about and share about their anxiety, their trauma, their depression and stuff like that. So it's a lot less lonely to be a part of this sort of movement now. But with my music specifically, I never really brought that angle into what I was doing. I have always been a pretty positive, outgoing, glass half full type of person. And I think a lot of people think of me that way. So it's been interesting and fun. And I say fun, I mean, it's also not so fun sharing the other parts of you with fans and through your music.
So being in a punk rock scene can be very liberating and also very validating for a lot of folks, especially when they're young and, like you said, dealing with mental health issues or other family issues. Or so when you were part of that scene, but you're also going through internal struggles around mental health, how is the punk rock scene? Was it helping with that? Was it kind of giving you a reprieve from this stuff? And sort of also, how are you dealing with these internal struggles?
Like I said, I've been part of this scene for a long time, and I would say that it's changed a lot. I think in the beginning, I leaned on it for the sort of community aspect, and I felt like I sort of fit in. But I also don't think it was necessarily always a welcoming space for women, also an Asian person, which wasn't like a huge part of like what you would see like at punk shows in Orange County when I was younger. So there was that sort of feeling that maybe it wasn't as welcoming, but you know, you find like your family and your like your group. And over time, I feel like I've sort of grown with that. And specifically in ska and ska punk in the last 5 years, it's become a much more inclusive space. There's a lot more queer people. There's a lot more women. I mean, ska music has generally always been working class people music, and we're all against racism and homophobia and all that stuff. But I really felt it in the last 5 years. And I think that now being part of what's happening now in punk and ska punk and stuff, it feels a lot better than it even did before. But I do still have a huge appreciation for when I was younger, feeling sort of like a loner or like an outcast or not really like all the people I was around in Orange County, California is a predominantly rich white sort of area. So I liked that feeling that other people were sort of there for music. And that was sort of what held everybody together. It had nothing to do with how much money your parents made or like what kind of car you were driving or anything like that.
Yeah, it sounds like you got a lot of joy from the punk scene and have gotten that through the years, and it's kept you inspired.
Yeah.
What was it like being a youth and having to deal with the depression? And it sounds like you kind of went at it alone. It doesn't sound like you had a lot of support.
Yeah, I think it started a lot when I was really young because my parents got divorced. My dad is affluent white person and my mom is Filipino. She came here when she was younger. So it was like two different worlds sort of. And when my parents got divorced, my dad got custody of me and my sister. I mean, I was just being raised by like a guy. And I think to him, feelings and stuff like that were not, it was just sort of like a suck it up type of thing, which I think I sort of carried that into my adulthood up until like recently when I got in touch with those sort of feelings. And I had experience going to like therapists and stuff, like court appointed therapists, and all that stuff really backfired on me. Like you think that you're talking to somebody in confidence, and then they're sort of like using it against you for your parents or whatever. Yeah, I did sort of do it alone. I want to say though that me and my sister are only 2 years apart. I'm older, but she's only 2 years younger. And we had each other to talk to about everything we were going through. Honestly, I don't think I would have made it out a normal person without her. I've told her this as an adult.
I'm glad you've told her.
Yeah. You know, it's important to acknowledge that with other people. I still am super duper close with my sister. I honestly don't think I could have tackled all the stuff that went on with us when we were younger. My dad got remarried, and that was really hard on both of us because our stepmom was not a nice person. So I'm just really glad I had my sister.
So court ordered therapy was not a good experience. Did you end up going back to therapy later in life?
I have two kids. I have a daughter who's 8 and my son is 6. And my daughter, who was my firstborn, when she was born, she was perfectly healthy as far as we could tell. And then around 1.5 and right before her second birthday, she was diagnosed with spinal muscular atrophy, which is a type of neuromuscular disease. It's genetic. Maybe some people know about what it is. It's the most common, uncommon disease is what they say. But basically her muscles just don't develop, don't grow. So she doesn't walk, but she's pretty typical for an 8-year-old and stuff like that other than that. But when she got diagnosed, I had a really hard time with it. I didn't realize how much internal ableism I had going on as a person, because most people don't realize how strongly they feel about something until it happens to them. Unfortunately, I had to go back to therapy for that because I didn't really know how to come to terms with my feelings. That was the first time I sort of revisited therapy because I was feeling really low. At the same time, I wanted to be a stronger person and a better parent for my daughter because I love her. Everybody that knows her loves her. So I just had to talk to somebody about that. When I look back at that time, I also don't know if that therapy was the best for me because I was talking to somebody that also didn't really have that same experience. So I did leave therapy after a little while because I found more comfort in talking to other parents that were going through something similar to me.
Yeah. Peer support model.
Yeah, peer support. And I just feel they offer a different perspective. And then my band had a sort of big blow up a few years ago where a lot of people in the band quit at the same time. And I felt a lot of guilt. So I decided to go back to therapy because I got super depressed about that. And then when I was in therapy then, I realized I still had some baggage left and some trauma left from my daughter's diagnosis and everything we were going through, and how I just didn't feel like anybody was really understanding what it was like to be disabled or be close to somebody that was disabled and have to go through what everybody collectively was going through. But at that time, I had enough experience and tools to know that I wanted to speak to somebody that had a disability. I looked for a therapist that could talk to me about those sort of things and acknowledge my daughter's experience for me, so that I could keep things in perspective for myself.
Most recently, you've written about some of these hard subjects, your upbringing and being around some not so nice people. Other songs are about the things you mentioned about the band and almost ending and your daughter. And obviously writing is therapeutic and allows you to kind of get the stuff out.
Yeah. For this last album, Talk Is Killing Me, we had a brand new producer. It was a friend of ours. Her name is Reed Wolcott. She is the lead singer of the band We Are the Union. And We Are the Union, they write a lot of pointed and meaningful songs.
I get fed up with myself. My mind went manic and jumped over the details again. Flat tires and amplifiers, can we go back to the beginning? Sorry.
Getting used to
And so that was sort of Reed's challenge for me, because like I said before, I've always just been sort of a like glass half full, very positive person, outgoing person.
Prototypical ska punk.
Yeah. And Reed was like, you know, I think it's time for you to like be angry. And I want to have a sort of open book, angry half past two album. So that was the challenge for me. And so sometimes I would come right from a therapy session and she would be like, so what did like, what went on today? And I'd be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I had to talk about this. Our song Talk Is Killing Me was about, I experienced some physical abuse as a child that I was talking about in therapy, and Reed was like, would you feel comfortable writing about that? And I wasn't. I still cry sometimes when I listen to that song, but you know, I have also got a lot of meaningful feedback from that. Writing about my stalker, writing about stuff that went on with the band was really just a practice. And like you said, like music is cathartic. And Reed would just say, she would just like challenge me with like, is there something that made you feel especially uncomfortable? Or is there something that you think you want people to know about you that nobody knows? And I think music that resonates with me the most is stuff that like I can identify with. And so that was why I was open to doing this, talking about being depressed. Every song on the album really was one of those things where I'm like trying to tell a story that is really uncomfortable for me. But, you know, I love this album more than like anything else we've ever done. And I think that's why, because I can listen back to those things and like, I see like a different side of myself in the songs. And I get to hear from other people about what those things mean to them or about their experiences.
When I wrote the Scream Therapy book, I was not really aware of what people would think when they read it. If they were, let's say someone in the book that I knew, my family or whoever, read it, and I didn't really think about that end result of them reading it. I thought more about just the catharsis and the creativity even of getting it out. I think it was good in the end, but I'm wondering how you feel about putting those songs out there into the world.
It was very scary because I think, like you said, I realized that people that were part of those experiences were going to hear them, whether they knew that the song was about them or not. I was probably going to have some really hard conversations with relatives. I have other siblings that maybe they didn't realize what was happening. When I was writing everything, I tried not to think about that. I really just tried to think about what it was going to do for me, which even now feels kind of selfish. The title of the album is Talk Is Killing Me. And part of it is like not saying anything was also really tearing me up inside and not making me the person I really felt was sort of my full potential. And it was holding me back. I would like hear myself say these things in therapy where I was like, wow, I guess that really still does bother me, or it's making me angry. And that's just sort of carrying through a lot of things in my life. So it's important to say the bad things, even if they are going to rub somebody else the wrong way. It's, if it's your truth, then it's like, that's your truth.
Was there any point during the recording or writing the songs that you had to pull the parachute a little bit and say, nah, maybe that's not going to fly?
I really was apprehensive about the one about the abuse that I experienced as a kid. And I did sort of push back really hard on not wanting to do it or release it after we wrote it, even though everybody in the band was like, this is the best song we've ever written. To me, it wasn't just a song. It even became sort of a joke when we would practice it. Everyone would be like, this is my favorite song. And I would be like standing in the corner, like rubbing my head and like trying not to cry because it was just so hard for me. But when I showed it to my sister, like I said, I'm very close with my sister and she was sort of part of all that. She told me that it was like a really powerful thing and that even though it's hard to talk about, it happened. And I can't just like pretend that it didn't. And it's good to share it. Because it was time for me to share it. I don't suggest that anybody do anything that they're not comfortable with. She could tell that it was still really affecting both of us, like her and me. And she was like, it's time. It's time to sort of like let it go and move on with however we can.
Like most ska bands, you've got like 15 people in the band.
That's true.
I'm wondering what their response has been in regards to you taking on this new challenge of writing songs like this?
It's so funny because we wrote this album because we had a big falling out inside our band. And like you said, it's a ska band. So you're not just falling out with like two people, you're falling out with six or seven people. When we had our big fallout and a lot of people left, I wanted to quit. It was like a big part of my depression was I wanted to completely quit music. I didn't want to keep going with the band. I didn't want to do music at all. And some of my bandmates that I've been in this band with since literally the beginning, like we've been friends since middle school, they were like, we don't want you to quit. And it's not just for selfish reasons. We think that this is important, that you keep doing this, and it's a huge part of you. And what can we do to make sure that you keep going? So they basically like sat me down and we made like a checklist of all the things we really wanted to do. And one of them was like, write a new album, write it with Reed, who is our producer. And I wanted to release it on Bad Time Records. We got to do that. I wanted to tour. We've done that all year. This is like the first time our band has been like a touring band. So basically they helped me check off all the boxes. They have given me their full support.
It sounds like you do a lot of advocacy for your daughter around ableism. And I'm curious to hear what you think about the language side of it, because, you know, there's a lot of throwing around words that are ableist out there and using words that are insensitive to mental health, people that struggle with depression. That's something you've really taken on since your daughter was diagnosed. And I'm assuming that you take it on with your own stuff as well.
I have a lot to say about ableism. That's true. Even other bands and friends and stuff, they know that there are certain words that I won't let them use around me. If anybody wants to use the word lame around me, I have definitely put my foot down and said, I don't appreciate you saying that. And I find that word extremely ableist. And if they ask me why, I have tons to say. And not even just in lyrics and stuff like that. As a touring band, one of the things that I do for every show we play is before we go to the venue, I check their website for ADA and accessibility information. And if it's not there, the venue will always hear from me. And I always tell them that they need to add stuff like that. I won't play at a venue that is not fully accessible to anybody. I always want our shows to be all ages. I don't always have control over that. But if it's a 2:30 show, if we're the headliner, it's going to be an all ages show. And I go around every venue we play at and I check everything that they have told me is accessible. I look for all gender bathrooms. I look for locks and stuff. I look for every single step in a venue. I like to know if people can get up to the stage, just like anything. I started recording all this information because there is no meaningful place on the internet that is taking this sort of consideration and information down. I think it's important that everybody be considered when it comes to live music and or how people are perceived in music. I do see a shift in that. I feel like a lot of artists are being held accountable for things that they say and they write. And a lot of them, it's their responsibility to adjust and change things so that the people listening to their music feel like seen and heard. And sometimes people will say things and they don't even realize what they're saying is ableist or sexist or homophobic, whatever. And as long as I see a correction.
There's so many words out there, right? So before I was diagnosed with bipolar, I was using the word crazy all the time because that was just what people said, like, oh, it's so crazy. And then I realized after I was diagnosed, well, wait a sec, people saying crazy is actually commenting on my own system works, my own mind works. And so it's easy to find another word to use, whatever that word is. Like I use wild usually, right? It's so wild. But it's just funny how there are words out there people could use that aren't offensive to people, but there's a habit there that they can't seem to switch or don't feel like they want to switch or have to switch.
Yeah. Well, especially I'll just use the word lame. A lot of people are like, that's just like a word that I've used for a long time. I've used it since the 90s or I've used it since whatever. I'm like, that's great. But here's what it means. And I think what you're trying to say is like, this sucks. This is bad. And my daughter doesn't walk. So I'm always like, that is literally what lame means. And I just don't want her to return to me one day when she's old enough to realize what people are saying and be like, why are you saying things like that? If she wants to use that word, she can reclaim that word all she wants. I know a lot of people that do that with words because that's the power of getting to take it back. I read about demystifying disability a lot, and there are things that I don't even realize, like the word dumb. People don't want to be called dumb.
You mentioned before about how after your daughter was diagnosed that you're having a really hard time with acceptance, with kind of looking back at maybe other reasons why you're having a hard time with your mental health. Now that it's been a while, how things have shifted for you?
When my daughter was first diagnosed, I went through a lot of where I was like thinking about the life she could have had and all this stuff. I think it's pretty normal for parents to sort of do that. Like we build these things up in our head and I'm like, oh, now she'll never be able to do this or do that. Will somebody love her and all this stuff? And I think part of like the mental health journey was sort of like reading stuff that was written by people with disabilities and just recognizing that there's like a whole life to live despite whatever it is. And so now it's changed more to an advocacy angle. And I'm always sticking up for my daughter in the school system, in our community, in the way I vote, and just any way I can. I also try and instill things in her so that she knows how to handle anything that's going. She's only 8, but she does know a lot. She knows when people are not being sort of like fair to her. And she's definitely not a very like, woe is me type of person, but she's not afraid to speak up. Even if somebody's parked crooked across the sidewalk and she can't get around, she's ready to speak up and say something to people. I do feel good about the message and what I'm trying to just get my daughter and my son to sort of notice about society and how we treat everybody and how to take care of each other, because I do and don't want them to be as angry as I am about those sorts of things. I think it's really punk rock to have anger for certain things and to want to change them and like fix them. So I want them to do that too. I want them to be able to feel that power and that responsibility.
That was my conversation with Tara Hahn of Half Past Two, halfpasttwoska.com. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. For merch, check out Screen Therapy on TeePublic. Okay, enough promoting. It's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Screen Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahaman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.